ABC Radio Australia.
Now, our next guest has done something, well, pretty incredible. Cora Allen is a visual artist based in Aotearoa who has done something historic. She's reawakened a traditional Niuean art form that hasn't been practiced since 1990. That's two whole generations that haven't seen this style of Niuean bark cloth. Now, Cora Allen dedicated her time to researching the practice of Heapo to bring it back to her people, which is really special. And now she's renowned in Aotearoa and Niue as the only living traditional Heapo maker. Now, she had lots to say about her grandparents because she owes a lot to her Niuean elders, specifically her grandma, who held on to the tradition all these years. And it wasn't until the passing of her grandfather that the grandmother finally said, "It's time we bring this tradition back." And at a particular point in this interview, Michael started to cry. Now, look, I'm bracing myself for this one. I'm not known for being in touch with my emotions. So if you're anything like me this morning, all right, find a quiet space. Let's take a deep breath together as we go ahead and listen to Michael Chow's interview with renowned Māori and Niuean artist, Cora Allen.
Cora Allen, kia ora, and welcome to News Daily. How are we doing this morning?
Thank you. Doing really well, actually. It's the weather's good in Tamaki Makaurau, where I live at the moment in Aotearoa, so I'm just enjoying a bit of sun.
Yeah, is this your studio? Is this where the magic happens? I'm looking at you on a Zoom call right now, and there's a lot of stuff going on. It looks like, one, you live there, but two, you get things done there.
Yeah, we actually live in an old church. My studio was the old stage where you'd get, like, announcers coming up presenting awards, or my friend's grandfather actually learned how to dance here in our house. And so the space itself, my studio is an old church, so it's really big and cold, but perfect for making really large scale artwork.
Ah, love it. And look, we got to talk about the art making, and much like stripping the bark from a tree to turn into cloth, we got to strip back some of these thick layers of memories, man, and turn it into a talanoa here. So could we do that by first learning a bit about your family's heritage and where you grew up?
So my grandparents, Vakaafi and Fosia Lafaiki, are from the villages of Bliku. And then as they grew up, they moved and were raised in Alofi. They're from the island of Niue. And on my mother's side, she is Ngāpu and Ngāti Tumutumu. So Māori and Niue. My husband's Native American as well, so he's Lakota Sioux.
Wow.
So my boys are Māori, Niue, and Lakota Sioux. So they have enough Indigenous magic in their bodies, and we look forward to seeing what they do every day and just the kind of lives they will lead.
Oh, what a family. I don't care if that church feels cold. There's enough warmth in that family, I'm sure. You've been practicing art for well over a decade now. How did your journey in art making first start?
I actually got a sports and rec scholarship when I was at high school. And when I started university, I actually enrolled in arts. And so that was when I was 17. So I'm 37 now, and 20 years later, I have been involved in the arts. And I don't think they realized my scholarship money for sports was paying my art degree for a few years. And so being in the art scene for my family was really different. Everyone played sports, netball and rugby. That's just what you did. And so going to pursue an arts career, my family often call me the space alien because I take the road less traveled. I have always loved drawing, have always loved creating, and the symbolism within Māori art, within Niue art. My dad is a carver as well, so it was always sneakily around me. I just had to kind of push into it. My nana is she was a sewer and embroiderer, and being able to see, I guess, craft and practice around me also inspired me to take up some of those things. Some of the works behind me that you can see are influenced by my grandmother's practice of sewing and embroidery. It's always in me, the presence that my tupuna and my whānau have put in me as I've grown up to love and to appreciate our culture. And so, yeah.
It's also great hearing that you had some other art makers in the family as well, so you didn't necessarily feel like you had, all the pressure of breaking new ground and people were like, "What are you doing? That's not a real thing. Why is it not rugby?" But like for us over here, we're Pacific Islanders living in the diaspora, and You know, we know that there's nothing better than being Indigenous, living on your own people's native land, your own people's whenua. And, you know, it can be hard when that's not the case. And of course, you are a proud Maori woman living in Aotearoa, but you're also a Niuean as well. But growing up away from Niue, how did that affect your, like, you know, your connection to your Niuean heritage?
I don't think I ever felt disconnected in any part of my life. My grandparents both lived a minute drive from our house. We spent so many weekends with them. I was in the Niue performing arts group through high school. We were made to do dances at 21st and birthdays and had money stuck on us. And so I didn't distinguish myself differently from Niueans that particularly lived on the island. I'm just like, aren't we just all Niue? Yep, that's just what we are. And I have a really proud grandmother and grandfather who spoke so highly of Niue. So in my head, it was like, it was a superhero power, really, to be from these places. And just that kind of input of knowledge and confidence, I think, really folds into my practice at the moment. However, though, as going through my practice as a hiapo tapu maker, I've found out that there's different words for a tofunga or a knowledge holder who lives on the island versus someone who lives off island. And as I've grown in my practice and as a woman of tangata Niue and tangata Māori heritage, I can see those differences. I can see what it might have been like to live on the island and have that connection and practice to this kind of idea of the motherland. And being, like you said, being Māori here, living in Aotearoa, I never felt like I was not connected to a motherland. And so going back to Niue for the very first time, I think I actually was like, oh, I have a second motherland. I have a second space because my grandparents were just implanting Niue knowledge all the time into me. So I didn't know I was missing out on anything.
I love that. For anyone at home, you got grandparents, please talk to them some more. You know, they got so much knowledge. Sometimes they're just waiting for us kids to ask the question. There's wealth there, you know, and we can inherit it. And, you know, your work, it's got extra level of significance to us because, you know, you've spent years reviving and researching a traditional Niuean art form, which wasn't practiced in two generations. It's called hiapo. You know, it's a form of decorated bark cloth. And that particular practice is lying dormant since the end of Niue's monarchy in 1990. Do you know why hiapo became a lost art form?
Colonization has a huge part to play in that. The changes in our systems, the changes with our people and our community. I think there were knowledges like how to make money to put food on the table for your family to feed them is, you know, a priority. And unfortunately, certain art forms didn't do that back then. I'm grateful to say that my art form helps to feed my family today. And so those gifts from our tūpuna have kind of made their way back into my life. I see myself as a person who's a reawakened hiapo. It's always been there. It's always quietly been in our conversation and our stories of Niue. It never really left. We just weren't able to access it because it exited so fast. And with the sharing of knowledge, I know that when I was first practicing, my nana asked me to not share with anyone outside of my bloodline. It wasn't until my grandfather's funeral where she saw how many people hadn't seen hiapo before, and it was all over their lounge area, and they were recognizing Niue patterns where she thought, okay, maybe we should share so that other people can have it in their lives as well. And it didn't hit me until, you know, people come to my grandfather's funeral once the first time they've seen hiapo made from a Niue person on a body of someone who's just passed away who was born in Niue. And so these moments that have been gifted to me through my practice, just let me know that, yep, we're on the right track because this is for our people. And how amazing is it to have memories like this where my family get to talk about hiapo was used at our grandparents' burials.
Oh, that's beautiful. I'm glad your grandfather got to experience your practice in the way you sent him off. That was that warms my heart, you know. And hey, if you're just tuning in, this is Nija Daily on ABC Radio Australia. We're hanging out with an exceptional artist of Maori and Niuean descent, Cora Allen. And look, we all know that practice makes perfect. You know, we do know that, you know, what it's like when we're just starting out with a brand new skill, whether that's learning a new language or cooking a new recipe in the kitchen. But when it came to hiapo, we'd love to know, how'd your first attempt at hiapo go down?
know what? I couldn't move my body for days. And I remember lying down after a few days of sessions and just like, what is this pain? I have a permanent bad right shoulder just from this constant movement. And when I paint, I don't put down any pencil marks. So I paint a lot with my elbow up so that I don't make any smudge marks. And the first piece I want to say is beautiful, because it actually is. I look back and I'm like, oh, I painted that with a pandanus seed and it looks mean. It doesn't have any particular significance, though, pattern-wise, because I was just doing patterns that came to my head at the time. However, that first piece was shown to both my grandparents when they were alive. So I have an awesome photograph of us all holding it and them being really proud just to see their first piece of hiapo that I had made. And so I think it wasn't just the creating of the first piece, but it was the showing of the first piece and getting to share the journey of finding the knowledge, going to museum archives, finding patterns, trialing. And one thing that I didn't know I'd be useless at is a machete. And so to harvest a tree, you've got to cut them with a machete, and I sucked. And so when I shared that with my grandparents, they're like, okay, we've got a machete at the back, let's go practice. And so just those little skills, you think, oh, I've gone to art school, I've got my master's, cool, but can you use a machete in the garden? And yeah, those kinds of things were stuff that my grandparents could teach me. And so, yeah, it was a good learning. The first piece and the whole process was such a humbling eye-opener.
Oh, that's so sick. Do you still have that first bark cloth on you?
Yeah, I can go grab it. It's like right outside the door.
Oh, my God. I would love to see it.
You want me to?
Yes.
Okay. I actually pulled it out yesterday.
You made it sound, when you said, oh, I didn't really have the patterns or whatever, you made it sound like this was like amateur stuff. This looks like, are you sure this was the first attempt? Because I am looking, for those who can't see it, this is really gorgeously detailed tapa or like hiapo. You know, it just... Oh my gosh, this is really nice. And you still have this hanging on your door right now as you work. That's so special.
It's funny that you were thinking it was going to be real amateur, because in my head it's still amateur.
Oh, it but does not look amateur.
It's beautiful. But that's very much a representation of how many patterns I had been looking at and how much I had studied before even touching the cloth. I, as a traditional maker, don't think that all art forms are for all people. I think they choose you and they require such drive and confidence when making them to not just reflect our 2.0 and our ancestors, but for the gift that they left us. And I purposefully don't share all of my knowledge, because my grandparents gifted me that. My 2.0 left it for me to find, and so I wouldn't just hand it over in a workshop. And those patterns just flowed out and it happened really fast. And so, no, I'm grateful. I don't often get to pull that one out. So thank you for asking about that one.
Well, it is gorgeous. Not that you need any validation that you're good at what you do, but just saying right now, you're great at what you do, okay? And look, we can talk about like how, you know, it's not just our ancestors' traditions surviving, but, you know, seeing them thriving, that is just so special. And like anyone can answer the question of like, why is it important that we keep these things alive, these traditions, these practices today? But for you personally, why is it important that we breathe life into these sorts of traditional practices today?
You know, I've never been asked that question. Really good question. For me, I just know it's innately a way of telling our story, telling our histories, sharing things that other people in the art world might not have found important enough to teach in art history. I know for myself, I didn't learn about hiapo. I didn't learn about bark cloth. If I'm in a position now that I have all this knowledge, I would love to share that in art history now. Go into a Pacific Island Studies course and share the wealth and the breadth of not just tapa cloth, but that it was a way of living, that our tūpuna used our skills to make money, to feed their families, to provide, to navigate a changing world. And that's what I really love about the art form, is that it allows us to talk about our changing world and our changing spaces through our patterns or through our styles. And that the piece that you saw, the very first one, very, very different from the work that I have now. And so it reflects the change, not in just my life, but the change in how I guess I'm moving in the landscape of 2024.
It kind of hit deep when you said the art world didn't deem this important or whatever, you know, because like, I guess, you know, our people had oral history and that's how all our things have survived. It's just we pass it down by our stories, what we tell our families, our children. And the Western world had the written word and then they decided, this stuff that's happening in the Pacific, it's not important or it's primitive or all that stuff. You know, it's just like, that ain't it. And again, my heart is full and I'm trying to fight back a single tear on my face right now. But like,
story of my life, crying all the time.
Girl, but like, look, final question, got to hit you with this. For any young Pacific Islanders listening right now, looking to take up an art practice that is perhaps, you know, intertwined with our cultural identity, like how you've done with your practice of hiapo, what sort of advice would you like to give to these young Pacific Islanders as they start out their journeys?
I recently just opened some work at the University of Queensland Art Gallery, the museum there, and some newer students came and other Pacific students came and they said, oh, we've never been in this space because these are like white spaces. And I was like, no, these are our spaces. These walls are built for stories and our stories deserve to be in them. Our stories deserve to be all over these walls. Our people shouldn't be afraid of these spaces because they weren't made for us. We can implant them in ways that when they see them, they'll be like, oh yeah, sorry, we didn't know about you, but we know about you now. And that's the power of knowing your identity in a strong way, knowing what you hold. And there's this song that the Māori party here, Te Pāti Māori sing, and that it's called Magic People. And my kids, they sing Magic People all the time. And I'm like, that's right, because don't forget, we are magic people. We come from a history of navigators and innovators. And why would we not deserve to be in these spaces? And so when those young students came in, I just shared my space on that and my thoughts, because an art gallery is for everyone. And if we have more curators from Pacific backgrounds, if we have more curators from Indigenous knowledge systems, then we'll have more Indigenous and Pacific Māori art in those spaces. If I would encourage anyone, just ask your grandparents lots of questions, because it will lead you to spaces like this. And that's exactly how I came to Hiapo. I asked my grandparents about art in Niue and what is something they would like. And they asked me to make the burial cloths, and I'm here today. And my work is all over the world, and our stories are transcending and moving into spaces they didn't before. So start with that. Ask your grandparents first.
Cora Allen, thank you so much for joining us on Niger Daily. This has been such a experience getting to speak with you and learn from you. And yeah, look, I hope we can catch up again in the future real soon.
Absolutely. Thank you.